brief history of the Holy Roman Empire, the Crusade of St. Louis. Well, St. Louis is one of the best kings of France and one of the few true Christian kings of the Middle Ages. He was a devout man who worked as a volunteer at hospitals, where he washed bedpans, washed the feet of beggars as king. He also abolished the age-old pagan ritual of trial by combat, which had for so long been incorporated in the Christian language and law. He was faithful to his wife and spent many hours in prayer. He was also a very calm and determined man who only became angry when he caught his men in sin. A product of the Middle Ages, he has sometimes been criticized for cruelty, but his cruelties were as a dove compared to a lion. For while Frederick II mutilated people for alleged crimes, Louis once punished some men by placing them in a small boat and dragging them behind the fleet on its long trip to the Crusades. St. Louis was forced to abandon his efforts at negotiating a peace settlement in favor of the Crusade for which he had fought so hard. Jerusalem had fallen to the savage Chorasmian mercenaries, and the kingdom of Acre, or Jerusalem as it was still called, was in danger of collapse. Frederick II had left the kingdom in a state of conflict. Although he had reclaimed Jerusalem, he had set the military orders against one another and divided the princes also against themselves. When Louis arrived in Cyprus, he arranged for the warring princes to make a 2-year truce with each other and began the planned siege of Damietta in Egypt. During this time, an emissary arrived from Mongolia. After the death of Genghis Khan, the empire was divided amongst his relatives. Güyük Khan, Genghis's nephew, ruled over northern Asia from Peking to modern Russia. Recently, he and his army had been converted to Christianity. His emissary arrived and offered a treaty with Louis, which would result in the collapse of Islamic power in the East and a unified Christian Palestine ruled jointly by Latin and Mongolian Christians. After a careful examination of their sincerity, Louis sent many gifts back with a message that he would accept the alliance with much rejoicing. Unfortunately, when the emissary arrived, Güyük had died and his wife, who was still a pagan, was ruling instead. She sent an answer saying that the alliance would not happen, but she would expect many more gifts, unless Louis wanted to meet her Mongolian armies. This was perhaps the first omen that the days of a Christian Palestine were ending. Louis set out for Egypt in May of 1249. Many scholars look back in retrospect and question the Crusaders' obsession with Egypt. It was believed to be the key to securing Palestine, and it lay in the conquest of Egypt. Certainly Egypt had been most powerful of the Muslim states, or at least of the Muslim states who were actively involved in Palestinian affairs. Nevertheless, it was removed from Palestine, and its conquest would be virtually impossible. The Egyptians held all the advantages, and the Christians had none. In retrospect, it would have been far better to secure Palestine, build up heavy fortresses at key points in the Middle East where invading armies would have to pass, but retrospect makes tactical decisions much easier. Right or wrong, Louis set out to conquer Egypt, and his campaign began very promisingly. The Sultan of Egypt had kept his own generals in as much fear that they were unwilling to make any decision without him, lest the plan fail, and they bear his wrath. As a result, the fleet of Louis sailed into Egypt and landed with no resistance. Indeed, the Egyptians abandoned Damietta to await orders from their brutal sultan. St. Louis had captured Damietta with barely a fight. It was hailed as a miracle and contributed to Louis's religious aura. Unfortunately, there was to be no more miracles in Egypt. The sultan died and a power struggle was in the making in Egypt. Louis believed that it was time to strike at Cairo itself. The attempt to siege Cairo proved disastrous. Louis was always cautious, hoping to avoid unnecessary loss of life or failure. But again, historians look back in retrospect and show that his delays and caution actually led to his defeat. The Egyptians were also patient and waited until disease and pestilence hit the Christian camp. Finally, in the spring of 1250, the Christians were all slaughtered except for the princes, who could bring a heavy ransom. Louis himself was captured in April while the Egyptians hung the heads of the Christians on the walls of Cairo. It was at this time that Baybars, the famed Muslim warrior, betrayed the new sultan and seized power in Egypt. He had the sultan's heart cut out. And then came to Louis. Faced with threats of torture and death, Louis stood firm and refused to renounce his faith. He offered money for the release of his princes, and negotiations soon took place. Eventually, standing fast against his tormentors, Louis agreed to pay 400,000 livres, the yearly revenue of France, in exchange for the men's release, and his own release was granted in exchange for the surrender of Damietta. St. Louis would then sail to Acre, where he remained, the uncrowned king of Jerusalem. He stayed there for several years, but he was never able to reclaim the holy city, and actually he never set foot in it. And of course, when he heads back to France, he decides to stop in North Africa, where he's captured and dies. So that's poor St. Louis. And it would point out, too, that probably of all the Crusades, his crusade was the best organized and financed. He raised money for years in anticipation for this. Unfortunately, he spent a lot of it and a lot of his men dealing with Frederick. When he got to the Holy Land, it worked out pretty well. It's just impossible to deal with all the changes. So, unfortunately, that's the end of St. Louis. But, and by the way, I would also mention one of the things he did, he managed to purchase in North Africa what he believed was the Crown of Thorns, which is kept at Notre Dame and was saved from the great fire that took place a few years ago. And it's put on display periodically during the year. Next time we'll go back and get rid of Frederick II for the last time and look at his legacy, which is a relatively short section. Probably look at some of the issues that come up in the aftermath. Now the sources for this, The Germanic People, Their Origin, Expansion, and Culture by Owens, Attila the Hun by Worrell, The Burgundians by Charles River, The History of the Ostrogoths by Burns, and The History of the Vandals by Jacobson, as well as The History of the Barbarians. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.